Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 619. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about cathedrals and medieval towers, space age architecture, and playgrounds designed to look like literary giants, paella, and festivals with things on fire as we go to Valencia in Spain. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. For those of you who listen to the iTunes enhanced version of this show, it's a very important announcement after the show. Please make sure you listen to that because changes are coming. But first, let's talk about Valencia. I'd like to welcome back to the show Jason Jenkins from anepiceducation.com, who's come this time to talk to us about Valencia, Spain. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again. It's always fun to be here.
And Jason has been on twice before. He's been on talking about Tokyo and also about Lombok, both of which I'd enjoyed. So we brought him back a little sooner than I usually do, which is a nod to the good job you did last time, Jason. Why are we talking about Valencia?
First of all, thanks again. It's an honor to be back a third time. I guess we're talking about Valencia because it's a place I know fairly well in that we lived there for 2 years. And when I say we, my wife and my two kids, we lived in downtown Valencia for 2 years. And then we have established friendships and relationships and just were back this past March for the Fies Festival, which I certainly hope to talk about while...
I certainly hope to hear about it, yeah.
it's certainly one of the main things that I think is worth pointing out to your listeners. It's a place we know. It's a place we love. We've written a lot about it. We went through a lot of drama to be there as we are not EU citizens. We had to go through visa requirements and things to be able to stay for as long as we did. We put our kids in local schools there. My son played, tried out and made it onto a third division football team and played our soccer, played there for 2 years. So it's a place we know and love very well.
Well, and the one thing we should say, we're not really talking on Amateur Traveler about going and getting visas to stay and things like that. We're talking about usually a vacation, which is easy in Spain, harder if you want to stay there longer. Although, since you were there, I believe they have put in the visa for people who do an online business. And they're one of the few countries, one of the only countries in Europe I know that has that, that basically the idea is that you're not stealing a job from somebody else if you're coming in with your own online business. So,
yes, that's right. It's kind of like the visa we had. It's called a non-lucrative visa, and we can shift directions. I know that's not what we're talking about, but we were on what's called a non-lucrative visa, which means we are not making money in Spain.
Right.
We have a job outside or outside income. I was still working online through our blog and through some old clients in Japan from when we talked about Tokyo. That's we lived there for 13 years before this. So yes, we had a non-lucrative visa to live there for 2 years. Non-EU citizens have to go through a certain amount. And that's not the crux of this interview, but it is a place that I would highly recommend for anyone going for 1 week, 2 weeks, or much, much longer. You could spend weeks and weeks in Valencia and not do the same thing twice. Lots of different opportunities. It doesn't get the same kind of attention. It's the third largest city in Spain, but it does not get the attention that Barcelona and Madrid often get. So I'm here to sing its praises.
Excellent. And we have done a show about Valencia, but it had been quite a long time, so it's worthwhile updating it. Why should we go to Valencia?
There's a lot of reasons, and I mean, a lot of them are the same reasons that you would go to any beautiful Spanish city. There's fantastic food, lots of different sort of cultural events, but I think there are some that are unique to Valencia. I mean, to be honest, and you may have discussed this in other Spain-related podcasts, but Spain in many ways is a lot of little countries put together. We could say that about Canada, the United States, the UK, but there are literally different languages. I mean, in Valencia, they speak Castellano, which is Spanish, and they also speak Valenciano, just like in Catalan or in Catalonia, where Barcelona is, they speak Catalan, and there are different cultures and traditions that go along with that. But why would I say? First of all, I'd say Valencia is on the Mediterranean. It has fantastic weather year round. There were days in Christmas where I wouldn't say I would go swimming in the Mediterranean, but I would be in a t-shirt and jeans and socks. It has an insane amount of fantastic restaurants, and it has that European al fresco dining culture in there. I mean, everything from Michelin-starred restaurants to great street food. It's remarkably safe. And like I said, this is coming from someone who lived there for 2 years. My wife walked around at night. We saw young women, old women walking around at 2 a.m. That part of it is it's a very late night culture. And there's a whole, you know, we could go off on a whole tangent about that. But it is a very safe place. I let my then 14-year-old son go hang out with his friends until sometimes 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night. I would never, ever do that in just about anywhere else that we've lived. Then it's also a very walkable city. And what I mean walkable and navigable means it's almost completely flat to where people with baby strollers or people with mobility issues, whether it be a wheelchair or a cane, can get around easily. There's sidewalks everywhere, has beautiful architecture, tree-lined paths everywhere we go. But then if you do want to take public transportation, the buses and the train system are fantastic. It's very easy to get a card that you can just zap when you get on so you don't have to fiddle with change. I can talk about how to get that card later if you want.
Okay.
There are also public bikes that you can pick up in one place and then return within 45 minutes. And that, you know, 45 minutes can get you halfway across the city. And when I say that, that's another thing that we really like about Valencia. And one of the reasons we stayed so long was that it has everything that you want in a big city. And, you know, large public festivals, good cinema, art galleries, museums galore, good restaurants. But it's almost laid out like a small city. I mean, we lived on one side of town and we could walk to the center of town in half an hour. A nice, beautiful walk and not along garbage dumpsters or something like that. It has a fantastic public park that we'll definitely get into at some point in there, because I think it's one of the main attractions of the city, and I'll tell you why it's unique as we go along.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about what we should do.
Where should I start?
That is up to you, sir. You know Valencia much better than I do, I think it's fair to say. One of the major cities in Spain that I have not been to. I've been to most of the major cities in Spain, but not to Valencia.
Well, okay. Well, then hopefully this will be convincing, and maybe we can even meet there sometime. I've sort of divided up the things to see. I mean, I could go into like all of the museums, or I could go into restaurants and things like that, but maybe it'd be better to go by sort of region of the city or certain area.
So, well, let's why don't we start in the historic center?
Exactly. That's where I was going to start. In the El Carmen district. Valencia was part of the Roman Empire. And then as years passed, it was also a walled city during the medieval times. And so the old walled city is an area called, sometimes I've seen it written as El Carmen. Sometimes I've seen it without the N, El Carme. I'm not sure exactly which one. It's possible that it could be both, because as I mentioned earlier, people speak Castellano, which is Iberian Spanish. They also speak Valenciano, which is its own dialect. And so street signs will often be with two different spellings. And they may just be a few letters different. It may just be an accent, or they could be radically different. So that it's possible. I'm not clear on this, but it could be Carmen is Castellano and Carme is Valenciano. They sound very similar, but they are distinct languages. You would maybe start in the center of this in a place called Plaza de Virgen, which is the Plaza of the Virgin. And this is where the main cathedral is. And I actually forgot to write this in my notes. Many people claim that this is where the Holy Grail is supposed to be in this cathedral.
That's the first I've heard that claim. Okay.
and it is a claim.
Yeah, okay? Sure.
There is a bejeweled chalice in there that does not look like anything that I think would be the cup from the Bible, but many people claim that it is housed in this cathedral, and it's a magnificent cathedral, whether this claim is accurate or not. This is the area where that is, and there's a basilica, there's a cathedral in this area, and there is a large open square, and there are still a Roman decree etched into the marble in the center of this square. So, it really gives you a perception of where you are. It's also very close to what's called the Torres Serranos. Torres means tower.
Tower. Mm-hmm.
Valencia was a walled city, but there are only two towers. The wall came down a long time ago. I can't remember if it came down during the Moorish occupation, before, after, but the wall is gone, and there are only two of maybe 14, 15 towers left. One of them is called the Torres Serranos, and the other is called the Torres de Cort. They are about a 15-minute walk from each other. They remained because at various times, all the way up to the Spanish Civil War, they were used as armories, as prisons, as storage facilities. And it's so good that they have left them, because they're just these magnificent structures that you can climb into. And I believe on Sundays, it is free. There are many, many of the museums that I'll talk about today are free on Sundays. And it's a minimal charge on other days, but it's a nice view from the top of these towers. The Torres Serranos is the gate that basically went to Barcelona. That was the road to Barcelona, where the Torres de Cort is the road to Madrid. That may be another reason why only these two towers.
Well, the towers are torn down in 1864 just to expand the city, as is true with many, many European cities. Basically, they didn't provide significant protection by that time period. They had outlived their usefulness militarily, and so a lot of places at that point tore them down, put in ring roads and things like that. Let's take a break here and hear from our sponsor. This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is an online event ticket marketplace. Whether you're traveling across the globe or across town, Vivid Seats can help you get tickets to a local concert, show, or sporting event. If you're going to New York, get tickets to a Broadway show. Have plans to visit Chicago, see historic Wrigley Field. Wherever your travels take you, Vivid Seats can help you fill up your itinerary with experiences you'll remember long after you return home. And just for listeners of Amateur Traveler, you can get 10% off your first ticket purchase at Vivid Seats using the promo code TRAVEL. That's it, just travel. So as you plan your next adventure, go to vividseats.com or download the app and enter the promo code TRAVEL to save 10% on your first order, whether it's a concert, theater, or sporting event. This offer is good to the end of August 2018, and thanks to Vivid Seats for sponsoring Amateur Traveler.
If you look at Valencia on a map, You will see sections of the city sort of radiating out southward from below this section. Above it is a green snake-like shape of the Turia Park, which I'll talk about. And then on the south side, you will see the ring roads, and the city radiates southward. It radiates northward as well, but you have the park kind of stopping that. Okay, so the El Carmen area is the oldest part of the city, and there are loads of various churches and cathedrals and restaurants in that area. I highly recommend just going for a walk, heading from this main plaza, the Plaza de Vergen that I mentioned, and heading in any of the three directions. East or west is probably best. If you head west, you will end up at the Torres de Cort, the other tower that leads to Madrid. If you head east, this is one of my favorite streets in the old quarter. There's just loads of opera houses and theaters and small galleries. And one museum that I would mention is, it goes by a variety of names, but the easiest to remember is just calling it the Toy Soldiers Museum.
Oh.
I've also seen it written as the Tin Soldiers Museum.
Okay.
This place is good for children, as I have, but it does not require you to have children to enjoy it. It has hundreds of thousands of tin soldiers. First few rooms you walk through, it's literally just the recreations of battalions of various ages of Spanish soldiers. But the deeper you go in, you end up in these sort of dioramas of ancient Egypt and ancient Rome, and then World War II. And then there's one massive diorama of a battle that I had never even heard of, that most North Americans battle between the French and the Spanish in the 1800s. And we're talking horses and miniature trees and an amazingly, dizzyingly complex diorama of a battle scene.
Do you remember what the battle was? It sounds like it was probably the Napoleonic Wars.
It probably was, and this is something I maybe should have put in my notes beforehand. I cannot remember, but what I mean is there are so many of these types of scenes. In
sure,
various,
yeah.
I mean, there are some that go back to Neanderthals fighting a mammoth next to the Romans, next to ancient Egyptians, next to Hitler and Mussolini. There's just so many different ones. And then there's a room with Batman and all sorts of sort of comic book type characters as well. But it's just an amazing place, and it's right in the downtown area, and I would mention it. On the other side of the plaza, I would definitely recommend going to the archaeological museum. Like I mentioned, this was a Roman city, and there is evidence of the Roman city all around the town, but they've preserved, lovingly preserved, underneath the main square. You can walk downstairs and see the columns, see the baths, see the places where they stored food and fish and pickled vegetables. There are various nymphaniums, I think is how you pronounce it, the fountains for the water nymphs. And they do a good job of making it a little more interactive and less dry than some archaeological museums, in that there are places where you can push buttons and then it will do it in Spanish, Castellano, it'll do it in Valenciano, and it'll do it in English. Some of them, I think, did it in French as well, where it will be like a man on the ground. Like it'll be, for example, a Roman soldier standing next to this nymphanium explaining a day in his life. So there's little bits of fun that you can have. Maybe this is actually a point that I should mention. Valencia, despite the size and cosmopolitan nature of the city, there is not a lot of English in this town. Maybe because it is overlooked by a lot of tourists. I don't know. It's not certainly not as popular as Madrid and Barcelona. And in fact, even if you drive 90 minutes south of Valencia, you end up in a place called Denia, where there's even English language radio stations and signs in English and German because of the tourists. I do not know why. It could be because there is a second official language in Valenciano. But, and I say this in that a lot of museums will only be in Spanish and Valenciano. And a lot of restaurants, waiter will not speak much English. A lot of the attendants in museums will not speak English. At least in my experience, and this is 2 years of living in the city, we found, for a city of its size, we found surprisingly few English speakers, or at least confident English speakers. And it was not an issue like, say, in parts of France or in Barcelona, where people are just turning up their nose and insisting that you speak their language. Because I've experienced that, and I have a certain amount of respect for that. This is sincerely people who just never learned. They never learned. They speak French, they speak Valenciano, they speak Spanish, but they do not speak English, at least in my experience. Other places that I would recommend in the El Carmen area, there's lots of fantastic street art and sidewalk cafes. You could spend days doing only these things. If you walk further south, you will finally find yourself at the Mercado Central, the central market of Valencia, which is arguably, and not just my opinion, one of the most beautiful public markets in Europe. For your listeners, simply Google and look at the images for yourself. The one in Barcelona is larger and has more eating establishments and things like that, but it is not more beautiful than the interior of this Art Deco building, the central market in Valencia, hands down.
Mercado de la Boqueria is what you were trying to think of in Barcelona. Yep.
That's the one. It's a great place. I highly recommend it if you're in Barcelona, but if you are looking for a beautiful building and a beautiful market, it's really hard to beat the central market of Valencia. The streets around the outside of the building also have some nice cafes, but the market inside is great. And there's actually one place, this is not some insider knowledge, I've seen it written somewhere else, but Carta Camara is a Michelin-starred a restaurateur, has a restaurant in Valencia, but he also has a sandwich shop inside the market that is fantastic. It is a working man's, I mean, it's a little higher end than the usual sort of bocata. Bocata is the name of a hard bread sandwich that's very common food in Valencia. Is they're a little higher end, but they're not expensive, and it's a great place to eat because you'll definitely want to be full before you walk through that market because you will get hungry very quickly. Lots of fine cheeses, wines, olives of every shape and size, filled with everything from blue cheese to anchovies to octopus. You will definitely want to get some food there. That market is fantastic and is definitely a highlight of the city, at least an architectural highlight for me. I'm at a loss right now. I forgot to write down the information on the building. It's one of those that is just, it's been many things before it was a market, but it is an amazingly beautiful Art Deco building. Not far from there, and when I mean not far, I mean 2-3 minutes walk, is a UNESCO heritage site called La Logna. And La Logna is the old silk market building. It's like a stock exchange in a way, not a market in the way the central market is a market. It is an astounding building. It's very easy to get in, and it's not a place that you're going to spend hours. So if you're going with children or people who aren't necessarily interested in long, convoluted histories, you can go here for 20 minutes or you can go here for an hour. It has these amazing spiraled columns, astounding ceilings that have inscriptions along them basically saying, blessed are the honest, because the dishonest will go to hell because this is a marketplace. There are gargoyles outside. It's just an astounding building.
It looks from the pictures like it could be a basilica. It's that ornate.
It's that ornate. It's just one of those where you walk into the main hall and your jaw drops. Now, how long you want to sit in that structure is up to you, but I would highly recommend going. It's a few euros to get in. It's nothing large amount. If you are interested in those things, then seeking an audio guide or an actual human guide could inform you on a lot of other aspects of it. It's fantastic. There's a place anytime we're in that area. My daughter was like, can we go to the chocolate place? Can we go to the chocolate place? And it was one of those where a family business for 70, 80 years and just has those sort of like fanciful chocolates as well as hot chocolates, which in Spain, churros and hot chocolate are a thing.
I think of that as more of a Madrid thing. And when you say hot chocolate, you really mean pudding.
You're right. I mean, the spoon literally stands straight up. It's a sauce.
Yeah, you dip your churro in, yeah.
It's not a beverage, that's right. But yes, the churros and buñuelo, those stands you will find all over the place with the very thick hot chocolate. And that's definitely an enjoyable little break in a variety of places.
I'm not sure what you're talking about there.
Buñuelos is just, it's another kind of deep fried donut. Like, you know, where a churro is a stick, a buñuelo is more of a mound, as it were. But both of them are deep fried and covered in sugar. At least in Valencia, and especially during festival times, you will find churros. Some will be dipped in chocolate, some will be dipped in strawberry, melon, caramel, variety of flavors, banana. The banana one's disgusting, but the other ones are really, really good. There's also something called a churro relleno, which is just like a chile relleno. Relleno just means filled, and it's like a larger gauge churro that's then been stuffed with caramel or chocolate, and they're fantastic. They're sinful. They're just downright sinful, but they're good stuff. So we've sort of explored El Carmen, and then there's lots of little cafes and galleries in this area that would be worth your while, but I think I've really kind of covered some of the main things that you need to see in here, as well as just the cathedrals and basilicas around the area.
Okay, and when you say cathedrals, that should be singular there. There'd be one cathedral in town. That'd be the home of the bishop. So you got one bishop, one cathedral.
Well, I guess what I should say then is there are other churches
that are of that scale. Yeah,
of that scale in other places. And I just learned this here. I'm talking to you from Guanajuato State in central Mexico, and we just did a tour of Guanajuato recently, and someone was telling me, what is the difference between a cathedral and a basilica? Do you know that? It's like something, it's like a miracle has to happen or a certain priest.
The seat of the bishop.
But then what makes it a basilica?
That one I'm less clear on. I claim ignorance.
I'm getting us off track here, but if you are interested in large Gothic churches. Mm-hmm. There are many around the town. If you happen to be there during the Christmas season, I actually highly recommend visiting Spain in general or Catalonia and Valencia in specific during the Christmas season, because it's just a magical mood in the air, and the nativities that they place into markets and churches, each one is unique and ornate and spectacular. My father couldn't get enough of them when he was visiting. He basically just wanted to spend every day going because they were all amazing.
So in a basilica, just so you know, has certain privileges conferred on it by the Pope.
That's it. Okay. I knew there was something that made it, you know, unique or, yep, or somehow different.
Which means that you will find some Protestant cathedrals specifically and Episcopalian, but you won't find probably Protestant basilicas.
Oh, right. Okay. All right. Now that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. The whole Pope thing, right? So radiating out from El Carmen, the next neighborhood beneath that on the east side is an area called Colón. And I'm just going to speak about this really quickly because there's a lot more to talk about. But Colón is sort of the Rodeo Drive, the shopping district area. Mm-hmm. And then there is another beautiful Art Deco market building there called Mercado Colón. And I just wanted to give it a shout out because it's a really, really beautiful building. It's not a market in the same way the Central Market, in that it's more of like cafes and bars and, you know, little hipster shops. But it is just it's a spectacular building and a great place to hang out. And it's in the shopping district area. So I would definitely want to mention that. Let's go north of the Carmen neighborhood. If you're looking at a map of Valencia, you're going to see this long green strip, mm-hmm, that is called, by a variety of names, it's called Jardín del Turia. It's called the Turia Park. A lot of people still call it the river. And the reason that they call it the river is because it once was a river. It was a main river that went, mm-hmm, straight through the middle of the city, straight past where ancient Valencia once stood, but it continued to flood. And then one time in, I think it was the mid-50s or so, it just flooded once too many or once too long. And then in what I consider one of the just an amazing achievement in sort of civic engineering and city planning, they decided to drain this stretch of river, they diverted the river south, mm-hmm, of the city. And they converted this 9-kilometer strip of river into a park, into a public park. Huh. And it's a beautiful, beautiful park. And just to give you a scale, I don't know how wide it is. I've told you it's 9 kilometers long. It basically goes from one end of the downtown to the far end, close to the Mediterranean.
Looks like it's about 250 feet wide. So relatively narrow, yeah.
It's narrow, but that's also 2 football pitches. Imagine 1 football pitch on one bank, 1 football pitch on the other bank, and then a strip through the center that's at least a 3-lane road. Now, it's not a road. It's walking paths, biking, mm-hmm, paths, playgrounds. There's a baseball field, a rugby field, multiple soccer pitches. That's where my son's, where his soccer team played. There is an opera house. There is a symphony hall with a magnificent fountain. There is so much in this area. And so this park, depending on your taste and what you want to do, I definitely think spending a little bit of time in this park is worth your while. If you have kids or if you just like to see bizarre playgrounds, one of the most in the world is in the middle of this park. It's called Gulliver Park. And if you're familiar with Gulliver's Travels, mm-hmm, then you remember the story of where, what were they called? The Lilliputians? The little tiny people. Lilliputians, thank you. Imagine if the playground equipment is a giant Gulliver that is tied down and the children are now the Lilliputian. His hair is the slides. His jacket is the slides. His boots is the ladder. The ropes that tie him down are the ropes that the kids can climb on. It's a really, really cool amusement park. You can bike by it. You can walk by it on these tree-lined. There's fountains and sculptures and small little rivers and the stuff like skate parks and, you know, small playgrounds. Mm-hmm. On the west side of this park, on the far west side of this park, is Valencia's zoo. And I rarely, almost never recommend zoos. I'm not a fan. We don't usually go to many animal attractions. And you can judge for yourself if you want to go to this one. But this is one of the better zoos I've ever been to, in that there's a considerable space. I mean, it is still a zoo. These are animals are contained in a small space, and so mm-hmm. you'll have to make your peace with that. But you feel more like you are walking through their environment. You feel like you were the caged one and walking through tunnels through theirs. It's really impressive the way the zoo is laid out. If you like that sort of thing, then I would definitely recommend that to you. Now, on the east side of the park, the far east side of the river park, and when I call it the river, locals will still say, I'll meet you at the river, even though it is no longer a river. And I should mention, too, that across this river are still these medieval stone bridges that are just spectacular and beautiful to look at. So we're now on the east side of the park. We've passed by the Palau de la Musica, which is the symphony hall. Uh-huh. There's a massive fountain and sort of a courtyard square. This is a great place to go on Sundays. There are hipster swing dance groups that meet here and hang out on the weekends. Not all the time, but this is where skaters go and little kids on roller skates. And then you keep walking along and then you're going to see this massive, well, it's an opera hall, but it almost looks like an
futuristic.
Well, futuristic is a nice way of putting it. I mean, some people, I would call it brutalist if it didn't have so many curved lines. It looks like a space age bike helmet, basically.
No, so it's got to be a lot more square to be brutalist.
Yeah, well, what I mean is it's just that kind of, yeah, this, yeah, it's all curved lines, so brutalist is not the right one. This is the Reina Sofia Opera House, and mm-hmm. there are multiple theaters inside this building. Various times there are free tours that you can take of the building. I highly recommend you taking them. The main opera hall is all in like blue reflective tile. It's magnificent. But then there are multiple other opera halls in various places. And some of the tours, we did a particular tour on one day where you're sitting in seats backstage while things are happening. I mean, they were able to do an entire performance without even opening the curtain. If that tells you just how large it is. Huh. It's a magnificent building inside. I'm not crazy about the outside.
Oh, see, I think it's attractive. So, but you know, I didn't live there, so.
No, well, maybe it's because I was looking at it from the roof of my building every day. No, and it's just a personal taste. I would certainly rather have that there than just a gray square building, for uh-huh. sure.
Actually, it looks like a bike helmet is what it looks like.
That's some sort of space age bike helmet. So now we've walked past the symphony hall. We've walked past the opera hall. We're still in the park. Uh-huh. And we're still in the park. But now we've entered an area called the City of Arts and Sciences, uh-huh. past the Reina Sofia Opera House. What's coming up next is called the Science Museum, and it's named after like a Prince Philip. I think it's like Principe Philippe of Science Museum. You're going to have this, and you're going to have this strange eyeball-looking half dome, which is called the... If you're not looking at these pictures, I'm going to try to paint this picture for your listeners in that we've gone from basically old Europe and medieval columns and all of yep. this. And now we're in this futuristic... Everything is painted white, and it's very bold space-age architecture. Uh-huh. There was some Disney movie called Future World or something with George Clooney a while back, and they filmed like it was supposed to be the space-age city, and they filmed it in the City of Sciences. So just to give you an idea of just the contrast that we've sort of transferred into.
Tomorrowland is the name of the movie.
Tomorrowland, thank you. The movie Tomorrowland, those scenes were filmed in the places I'm about mm-hmm. to describe. So the hemispheric is in a pool of water. It sticks out to where it's like a half dome, but with the reflection on the water, it looks almost like an eyeball. And that play IMAX-style movies there. It's like a planetarium. It's a dome-shaped theater underground.
Yeah, the last time I was in one like that, it was at the Expo in 1986 in Canada, and they called it an Omnimax. So I don't know if that is a generic term or not.
Right. Well, if you've ever been to a planetarium, then you know what kind of theater I'm talking about. It's not a flat rectangle. It's almost a dome. It's a beautiful building surrounded by fountains and water. They actually, on the weekends sometimes, kids can rent clear plastic boats or the big inflatable hamster ball almost and like walk on the water. Then when you get past that, you get to the Science Museum, which is another glass and steel and white stone building that's just magnificent to look at. They have concerts here on the weekends. Moving past that, you're going to get to the Oceanographic, or Oceanographique, I guess is how I would say that. I think it's actually Valenciano that is written in. And this is the city's aquarium, and it is a super-duper futuristic-looking aquarium. It's a walk-in, walk-out place. Some of the architecture here will remind you of space-age seashells and a variety of things, and they filmed a lot of that Tomorrowland in that building. Now, all of this is within 5-minute walk of each other. It's all in the end of the park. And from here, you have all of these different grassy fields to have a picnic, bike lanes, playgrounds, walking paths, jogging paths, wooded areas. And then and there's exits, of course, on both sides of the river and along the edges of the river. There are restaurants, cafes, shopping areas, shopping districts. So it's an easy way to spend a day in this park, which I think is a great place to go. There are bicycle rental places in the area. If you can't get the public transportation card, you can just rent a bike for the day. But it's definitely a place worth mentioning. I'll just give a little shout out to our old neighborhood. We lived right across from Gulliver Park that I mentioned earlier. And the neighborhood to the west of that is called Russafa. And Russafa will be spelled various ways, depending on if you're reading it in Castellano or in Valenciano. Sometimes it's R-U-S-S-A-F-A, and other times it's R-U-Z. Russafa sometimes it's called the Brooklyn of Valencia. This used to be sort of a rough and tumble immigrant town that is now being gentrified, and there's more design cafes and nose rings, and it's a fantastic place to walk around, especially at night. There's lots of fantastic restaurants with tables spilling out onto the street. There are some great galleries in the area. It still has a gravelly edge. There's less of the tree-lined boulevards that you may find in other parts of town. It's a little grittier, but when people ask me where to stay, I recommend, if you're looking for hotels or Airbnbs, in the Russafa area, sort of the west part, the closer you get towards the park, it's called L'Exemple. It's like L apostrophe E-I example. Almost sounds like example. That's definitely a more well-to-do area, but there's fantastic old city blocks with loads of restaurants, loads and loads of restaurants that are worth wandering, looking at the menu and checking. Spanish don't eat like people, North Americans or British do. I've already mentioned that it's a late night culture.
Right. Well, and it tends to get later as you go further south. It's later in Sevilla than it is in Madrid, in part just because of the heat.
That's right. The colder it gets, the more you want to go inside.
Yeah.
Valencia is a late night culture, and it also has, like many parts of Spain, there's basically 5 meals a day. People don't eat a large meal. They eat a little something when they wake up, and then they have breakfast later, and then they have lunch around 2 or 3 o'clock. So if you are traveling with kids, or you are someone with low blood sugar levels or something, and you're hungry around noon, you may not find a lot of these restaurants I'm talking are open. Same thing goes for dinner time. If you go walking around downtown or any of these places I'm talking about, and you're looking for a dinner restaurant at 7 p.m., they're not going to be open. And then they may not be open at 8. They may not even be open at 9. They may be opening the doors at 9. It's a very late night place. I'm not going to say you're not going to find any place open. There's lots of bakeries. You can find you can find some bread, or you can find a bocata, the sandwiches I was talking about. But I'm talking about a lot of the restaurants that you may be looking. They may not open until 9 or 10 o'clock. It's not uncommon. So the sooner you adjust your diet to that, the happier you'll be, because it'll be very frustrating if you show up at a place hungry at 7 o'clock and then you have to leave disappointed.
Well, and we had a trip to Spain in 18 years ago or something like that, and we did not adjust. And the problem with that is we were in places that were catered to tourists, but what that meant was that the good restaurant didn't open till 9 or 10. And so if you want to go eat at 7, you were eating at some lousy tourist restaurant that really you knew you were going to get a bad meal from the moment you walked in. And that was disappointing.
Yes. And so maybe I should mention that places that are open for lunch at noon are serving to tourists, and you're probably going to get tourist prices, and you're probably going to get tourist taste.
Well, and the other problem with, if you're catering to tourists, you're not catering to repeat business. The local place has to be good because they want you to come tomorrow. So
maybe this is the time to talk about the national food of Spain, which originates in Valencia, which is paella.
Oh, I didn't know that was from Valencia. Okay.
It's totally from Valencia, and I definitely want to touch on this at some point, because one of the sort of side trips to, you know, basically the rice fields and the bio reserve south of the city is where a majority of the paella rice is grown for the entire country, and it's ingrained into the culture there. And there's a whole other side trip that, if we have time, I'll talk about it. But paella is serious business in Valencia, and there are a variety of forms of paella, and they are all delicious, but traditional old school paella is usually it's chicken, duck, or rabbit, or maybe a combination of the three. There's no seafood in it. There's no shrimp. There's no fish. Those type of paella, your typical Valencian will eat, but they will say, this is not paella. This is fish and rice. So just
interesting.
You're talking about Italians say this isn't real coffee, or French say this isn't real this. Valencian, you know, there is really paella valenciana, and that is what we're talking about. And Valencia has a variety of foods that I have not even have time to get into here that are delicious and very unique to the region. The main kinds of paella you'll find paella with shrimp. You'll find the black paella with squid ink. It's usually served with garlic mayonnaise. And you'll find a lot of these paella places near the Plaza de Virgen. I have not had a good one in that area. You know, maybe even because they're usually settling for tourists. There's other places I can tell you to go for that.
Well, why don't you tell us one or two other places to go for that?
Basically, I want to eat paella down near the area called Albufera. Albufera is the biosphere, but it's south of the city, and it's basically rice field. If you knocked me unconscious and I woke up and looked down here, I would have thought I was in Asia for a moment, because it is rice fields after rice fields. But the rice grains there are very fat and short and stubby. When people talk about paella, it's not the toppings. It's the rice is the main ingredient. The rice is the star. And the rice has to be right for someone from this region to say that it's good. I'm not saying that putting clams and shrimp and all of those things into a paella, if you take a class in Barcelona, is not delicious, because it certainly is. But trying the unique Valencian paella, I think, is worth your while. Now, yeah, since we're off on this, let me just make one other point on paella, since we were talking about like tourist places and that. Any restaurant that serves paella at night is serving to tourists. Paella is traditionally a lunch meal. The Spanish, as we were talking earlier, Spanish in general, they eat on a very different meal schedule. Uh-huh. And lunch is the largest meal of the day. Lunch is the largest meal. You eat at 2 or 3 o'clock and it lasts several hours. My children literally got off 2.5 hours in the middle of their school. My kids went to local schools there for 2 years. They got out at 1 o'clock and weren't supposed to come back until 3:30, because they're supposed to sit and have this large meal. Traditionally is the way it has. We changed a few things along the way, but it is a siesta type culture where you go home, businesses close. That's another thing, is if you need a fountain pen or something from a tool shop, it's not going to be open between 1 and 3:30 in the afternoon. But I'm digressing. If you want to eat paella, you need to be looking for it in the afternoon. Now, the side trip that I was talking about, since we're talking about paella, I highly recommend looking into a side trip to an area called Albufera. And Albufera is where the rice fields are. It's also where tens of thousands of migrating birds go through the year. There's a part of the park where you can go in. And one time we went in the sun, I can't remember if it was summer or winter, I'm getting it mixed up. But one time we were there and there was 15 types of duck. Then 6 months later we went and there were flamingos, like literal flamingos standing out there in the marsh. So this area gets very close to the Mediterranean Sea. And so it's kind of brackish, but there's towns there called El Saler is one. El Saler is a rice growing town. And if you get further south, a place called Sueca is another. It's on the southern end of this. You go to these towns and you're going to find the real deal. That's where you're going to find real paella. And so I would highly recommend that. One place that we liked was called El Rec. I don't know if it still exists. I don't know if it's still good, but that's a place that I went with Valencian friends, and we really liked it. It was right on facing up to the river. People take real pride in this, and they are very picky about what is and what isn't paella. But visiting this area, I think, is a nice sort of side trip. There's old traditional houses. It's just, it's a time capsule in a lot of ways.
And I'm going to start to head us towards wrapping up here. So why don't we wrap up this, and then we've got at least three things we haven't covered yet that you mentioned earlier that we have to pay off on. You mentioned a boat trip. We'll finish the thought on the boat trip.
The boat trip is in Albufeira. That's going into that area to do. I think if we're running out of time, then I think I really need to talk about the Las Fallas.
That was one of the three that we needed to pay off on. The other two that I want to do quickly is you mentioned street food.
Street food, like you would get in the suites. The other main street food would definitely be various forms of olives and bocadillos. Bocadillos would be serrano ham. You'll find lots of different kinds of forms of ham and tortilla patata, which is basically just a potato omelet. Mm-hmm. Those are the main things. Another interesting, you know, quick little digression here is lots of places are called cervecerias, and mm-hmm. they are your typical bar and grill, and they have food behind glass, and then you get little samples of that. It's a form of tapas, and you'll find these all over town. You'll actually find a lot of Chinese immigrants in Valencia who have basically bought up cervecerias, not changed anything on the menu except maybe added some dumplings at the bottom of the menu list. But any of these places are going to serve you pretty much the same sort of thing, and sausages, chorizo, all of those kinds of things. There's not much to go into as far as street food as opposed to some of the other places.
And then you mentioned a transportation card. We should look for it. It's going to save us money. Anything else we need to say about it?
You go into tobacco stores. That's where you buy them. There may be other places, but you'll see massive signs for it. Just says tobacco, and you go in and ask for a bus card, autobus, tarjeta. These cards, you put money on them, you top them up. Ours was attached to our bank account, but I think you can top them up.
At that tobacco store, yeah.
And then that way, when you get on a bus, you just beep, and then you get on. But the buses and the city bikes use these. We highly recommend them for the buses because also you can use one. Everybody doesn't have to have their own card. If you've got four people, you can tap the card four times.
Got it.
It just saves a load of time. And it's cheaper. It ends up being cheaper than putting in coins every time you go.
Okay. And then festivals.
Fallas Festival, Las Fallas, is one of the most spectacular things I've ever seen, and it seems like a crime that so few, at least North Americans, know about it. I don't know how many Europeans know about it. I did, the last time we were there this past March, I did hear more English and French than I did in the past, a little Russian actually, which was kind of surprising, but it's mostly something known to the Spanish. People know about the running of the bulls. Mm-hmm. People know about Tomatino, which actually happens just outside of Valencia in a town called Buñol.
You're familiar with Tomatino,
the big tomato fight. Everybody's seen that. That's all over the place. But the Fallas Festival just hasn't seemed to catch on.
Well, a lot of people don't like fire.
Maybe that's it. Fire
actually,
bad.
I don't think that's true, but...
I'll get into the history of it if time allows, but before I do that, I needed to describe the scene. Basically, for this 1 week, there are a group of artists who are paid by the state to build statues. Some are the size of a dollhouse, some are life-size, and they're usually human figures or some version of a human figure. Some are life-size, and then some of them are six stories tall. Many of them are six stories tall. During this 1 week, they are placed into the street, into main intersections, hundreds of them. Well, literally thousands if you think about the entire Valencian community. That's the state of Valencia. It's called the Valencian community. But in the city of downtown Valencia, there are literally hundreds of them. Some of them, I mean, imagine one of them, the main figure, is just a head that's probably two stories tall with other than life-size figures around it. They're completely ornate. If you Google the images, and of course I'll be sending you some images, you will see they are spectacular. They are colorful. Some of them are childish. Some of them are a little profane. If you are easily offended, you might find a few of these to be a little subversive. A lot of them are very political, meaning that you will recognize faces like Obama and Putin and Trump and Kim Jong-il, and then 100 other Spanish politicians that you might not not know are figured into them. So there's a lot of political messages. But they just seeing these figures is an astounding work of art when you see the size and scale and how long it took these men and some women to build over the course of the year. And at the end of this week, they are all burned to the ground in front of huge crowds, all of them except one.
Oh, I didn't know that. I did not know there was except one. Okay.
They keep one actually in the Science Museum, and the venue may change over the years, but in the past few years, one of the exhibition halls in the Science Museum has this massive room with the medium size, the life size ones that are like, you know, human size of various, you know, artists have made. And people, you go and you see and you vote, and one is saved and spared and put into the Fias Museum. And all of the others, including all of the large scale ones, are burned to the ground in front of your face at midnight and 1 o'clock in the morning. Fireworks are going off. Everything smells like gunpowder and chocolate because you've got the hot chocolate and then you've got everybody, 5-year-old kids throwing massive fireworks around. It's very loud. And then you have these massive fires. You have thousands upon thousands of women in traditional dress. They're called the Falleras. And they're sort of like a queen of the festival and a princess of the festival. And they're in astoundingly ornate period dresses in parades, just seemingly marching all day, every day. At the center square, for 30 days, there is something called the mascleta. And the mascleta is fireworks in the middle of the day. And these are not meant to be beautiful and colorful. They're meant to be loud. And if it tells you how loud, I couldn't watch television, and I lived a kilometer away. And this happens every day at 3 o'clock leading up until the main mascleta. And I'm sure that we can put links to YouTube videos or other things where you can see this. It's so loud, pregnant women are not allowed to be within 2 blocks.
Oh, my gosh.
Actually, the local tradition in Valencia is they say, don't plug your ears, open your mouth so that the sound can go through your head. Now, I don't know if there's any scientific basis to that. But all of these things are happening at once, and it's complete insanity. And this mix of art and chaos and music and tradition, I didn't mention that all of these thousands of women from all over the entire state of Valencia in these period costumes from 5 years old to 60 years old, they go on these parades, and then they're carrying white roses or red roses that they then carry to the center, the Plaza de Virgin, where we started this entire conversation, to a 3-story statue of Virgin Mary. And they present these flowers to her, and then there are people there filling the white and the red to create these ornate patterns of this Virgin Mary statue that by the end of the festival is completely covered in flowers. Of course, they do not burn the Virgin Mary statue. It's just covered in flowers. But all of these other statues that carry all of this different meaning, I mean, it's like a Disney acid trip or something. I was to describe it, because the figures in a way are sort of childish, but then they may be doing something kind of subversive, or there may be a little bit of nudity, or there's obviously some political message that, and you know, celebrities that you know, especially if you follow football, soccer, I mean, you'll see Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi in there. You'll see there was at least 6 Donald Trumps this year in various forms, and Kim Jong-un, and then all of the main people in Spain, France, and Angela Merkel, a massive one of her.
And we're talking about a festival that happens in March?
March. It is March. And the history of it is basically it's the celebration of St. Joseph, who was also the patron saint of carpenters. Hundreds of years ago, carpenters they would have these spare wood so that they could work in the winter. They would have this wood to hold candles up against the wall so that they could see. So at the end of the year, or at the end of the winter, they would have all this extra wood left over. And so they would burn it. But then the evolution is this, is instead of just burning it, then they would start to make scarecrow type figures. And then suddenly those scarecrow type figures started to look like the one corrupt politician in town. And they just became more and more elaborate. Now there's a lot more materials involved, polystyrene and styrofoam, which of course smells awful when it's burning. And
that
seems like a bad idea,
but okay.
Yeah, it's a really bad idea. And I can't justify that at all. But when you see the size and scale of these, I mean, there was one I loved from a few years ago that was like a Dionysius figure. And then last year, there was one of, and there'll be of various themes. There'll be one that's sort of an Asian theme, and there'll be another that's...
Well, and I'm actually going to cut you off here because we're getting kind of long. Anything else we need to know before we get to Valencia?
I think the main thing is if you're used to the typical North American or British schedule of when you wake up, when you go to sleep, when you eat, you need to adjust
that. Give that up.
And be ready for things to be closed in the afternoon. Not everything, but a lot of things that you may want to see will be closed for several hours in the afternoon.
Okay. You're standing in the prettiest spot in Valencia. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Probably at the top of the Torre Serranos. That's that main tower. You can see the park behind you, and then you can see the roads that go into the city. And of course, if we're talking about during Fias, even the city square where I would be surrounded by these statues.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Valencia.
Okay. This may be only in Spain, but I'll tell it anyway, is when you've eaten your lunch, which is usually called a menu del día. That's where it's a set lunch, menu of the day. And I highly recommend that's the best time to eat food at the fanciest restaurants because they give you a nice portion. And it comes with coffee and dessert. And I order my dessert and then I ask for my coffee. And they look at me like a child who doesn't know his manners. And they tisk, tisk, tisk. And they say, just wait for your coffee.
Coffee comes after dessert.
Coffee comes after dessert. No one's going to give you coffee because you have 3 hours for lunch, right? You have three. So if you try to hurry at lunch in Valencia, you will be tisked, and they will pat you on the head and they're not offended. And when that happens, it's only in Valencia.
Well, and the one thing we should say too, and this is true in Europe in general, but I think even more true when you're talking about this kind of restaurant culture is, good service is not fast service.
Right.
And you just need to adjust to that. It's good service is letting you have your meal and your time and your space and the table and not trying to turn it over quickly. So it's just a different set of expectations.
I'm glad you mentioned that. You're not expected to tip, even though you can, but they're not working for tips, and that will become apparent immediately. And you may ask for your check 5 times and they don't come.
Well, and if you don't ask for it, they may never come.
They may never come. So if you're in a hurry, you're going to need to take a deep breath.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Valencia in just 3 words.
Sunny, relaxed, and cultured. I think that would be a good way to put
it. And cultured, you mentioned the opera. Anything else that sort of leads you to say cultured for Valencia?
The heritage. One of my best friends there was a restorative architect, and he led me into, just told me so many amazing stories about the area. Classical music is revered. There are lots of cultural festivals happening with traditional music and traditions. I could have said traditions in a certain way, too. The people are very proud in Valencia.
Excellent. Well, our guest again has been Jason Jenkins from AnEpicEducation.com. Jason, do you have a particularly great post about Valencia that we should send people to?
Sure. I have a number of them. I've got a top 20-something things to do in Valencia. I've got Valencia with kids. I've got restaurants in Valencia. I've got a dozen of them. I'll be happy to send one to put in the show notes.
Excellent. Thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler again and sharing with us your love for Valencia.
Pleasure and the honor is mine, Chris. Thank you so much.
I mentioned at the beginning of the show that I had some news, and I'm afraid it's bad news for those of you who subscribe to the iTunes enhanced version. We are making some changes in the show, and one of the things that means is that show will still be around, but you'll need to go to the website to get it. It will still be free. It will just be available only from the website, and all of the RSS feeds that you use to subscribe to shows will be for the MP3 version of the show. And unfortunately, this is something that I need to do. 13 years doing the show and barely breaks even. And as I look towards retirement, I'm doing some changes to try and see if I can make a little more money from Amateur Traveler so that I have some more options in terms of what we do for retirement. I hope you understand that. I did a survey, first of all, on the Facebook Amateur Traveler page and said to people what we were planning on doing. At that time, we were thinking we'd be charging for that version, which is not what the decision was. And I think it ran basically about 94% said they really didn't care because they don't really listen to that version of the show, or they don't really watch the pictures in that version of the show. And about 6% said, I would leave, you jerk. That was the option I gave them. You know, sorry to see that 6%, but it's still something that I'm afraid I need to do at this time. I've been kind of toying with that idea, as you know, those of you who listened to the show for a long time, 4, 5 to 10 years, but it's just gotten to the point where I need to do something with that. And I apologize for that change. I know that not all of you are going to be happy with that. And if you just do decide to leave the show in a huff, I understand, that's fine. If you do, I hope you find podcasts that you like. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.